All across Michigan, high school seniors are donning their caps and gowns, getting ready to graduate. For many, the next big adventure is going away to college. So this is the time when students are making their final college choices. Allison Leota hopes that her latest book will prompt students and parents to be informed, to be aware, do some extra research, in particular, to check into reported incidents of sexual assault on campus. Allison is a crime and suspense writer, and her latest book is The Last Good Girl, and this is the day it is being released. The Last Good Girl is set at a prestigious Michigan university called Tower University. Freshman Emily Shapiro disappears after leaving a college bar, and the intense investigation reveals she'd accused a senior named Dylan Goldsmith of raping her. Allison Leota, welcome to Stateside. So good to have you here on the day the book's being released.
Thank you, Cynthia. Thank you so much for having me. It's a thrill.
I like to just pick up a book, and this is exactly what I did, fall right into it without doing any release of advanced publicity materials that get sent along. I just read the book.
Right.
I'm reading along, and your central character is a federal prosecutor named Anna Curtis, and I'm thinking, gee, this author really seems to know the ins and outs of the law and of college life. And then I discover you went to Michigan State, you went to Harvard Law, and then you were a federal prosecutor dealing with sex crimes.
Yes, I did what they say you should do, which is write what you know. So I have a federal sex crimes prosecutor protagonist doing exactly what I did when I was in Washington, D.C.
And how much of what we'll read in The Last Good Girl is based on actual things that happened?
Well, I mean, none of it technically, because right. I don't want to be sued.
Sure, but inspired by.
Sure, inspired by all of my cases around the country and by cases that I handled. There's so much going on. Unfortunately, there's too much inspiration out there right now in terms of sex assaults on college campuses. And I tried to take the most interesting and authentic bits and pieces, details from all these cases, and weave it into something that would be a fascinating story for someone to read in a novel.
Fascinating story and also lessons to be learned.
Absolutely. That's my favorite type of learning. I've always been a big bookworm, and I love to learn while I'm not even realizing I'm learning, while I'm just caught up in a story. And so that's the type of story I try to write.
So tell us about Emily, and especially why it was an important choice for you to make her a college freshman.
I wanted to highlight the Red Zone Week. You know, right now it's May. All those freshmen who came in last year are a little bit older and a little bit wiser. But come September, there will be a new batch of freshmen at all these college universities, and they're on their own for the first time. They're 18. They may have never had experience not having a curfew or having unfettered access to alcohol. And because they're so new and inexperienced, that is a huge time for predators to prey on them. And they call that time the red zone because so many sexual assaults happen in that first week of college. So that's why I wanted to put Emily there, to show that through her eyes.
And Dylan, the golden boy, is a member of a prestigious fraternity. And that fraternity membership is as important as Emily's being a freshman, isn't it? Because of some statistics that you've presented that are mind-boggling about members of fraternities.
Absolutely. You know, as a sex crimes prosecutor, one thing I saw over and over was that young men in groups tend to make decisions that are quite a bit worse than young men acting by themselves. And whether we're talking street gangs or football teams or fraternities or Congress. Mm-hmm. And in fraternities in particular, the numbers are staggering. That it is estimated that boys who join fraternities are 300% more likely to rape than boys who don't.
And as we learned from your book, Dylan's fraternity, Beta Psi, quote, air quotes, is mm-hmm. known on campus as the rape factory. The tagline for this book really says it all. It was his word against hers until she disappeared. In your experience as a federal prosecutor, Allison, is that the way it generally is when someone presents a complaint, a sexual assault complaint?
Initially, it is his word against her word, and there is definitely a challenge when it comes to that. But I think that the best prosecutions, the best investigations, go further than just listening to what he said and she said. There's almost always corroboration in one form or another, whether it's witnesses, a bar tab, text messages, social media posts. There, you can dig deeper, can and should dig deeper. And that's what we try to do in these sex crime prosecutions, find that corroboration.
And that growing awareness of this problem of perhaps people not being believed if they try to present a case, which plays into the image of the university. And you very skillfully show the thinking behind that. But is that changing now that the kind of the white light of attention is focused on this?
I think it is changing. It has to be. We're talking about it so much. And just the act of talking about it is changing things. This is a crime that has thrived in shadows, in secrecy, in silence. So the fact that people are talking about it, it's giving a language, a vocabulary to what happened. You know what stood out to me, slightly different topic, on with Bill Cosby, when those women came forward who were raped in the 1960s, they didn't call it rape, and they didn't even know what it was that had happened to them. They did not even have a vocabulary. They just knew it was something bad and wrong, but the whole idea of a date rape or drug-facilitated sexual assault, it just wasn't even there. So even just the fact that victims now today have a vocabulary to talk about it and hear other people who look like them talking about it and share that experience, I think it's giving more courage to other victims to come forward.
Your book really does a great job giving us a sense of place. We can all, if you step foot on a college campus, kind of get the feeling of what you call Tower University. I'm wondering if you would read a passage for us. And this is at the very, very beginning of the book as Emily is leaving a bar. It's right at the, you know, early part of her freshman year. And she heads right into Dylan and his posse.
Thank you. A raucous bunch of Beta Psi boys rounded the corner. Dylan was in front, of course. He was the alpha dog in any pack of males. Tall and swaggering, dressed in clothes that were both effortlessly casual and painfully expensive, he could be a poster boy for fratty privilege. The other guys clustered around him, vying for position. Emily froze a few feet from the entrance to Lucky's. Its cone of light still surrounded her. Dylan's eyes locked on hers. He smiled, walked over, and stood in her space. Too close. The other boys formed a semicircle around her. She felt unsteady. "I don't want any trouble," she said. "Doesn't seem that way," Dylan drawled. "Seems like you're doing everything you can to stir the pot." "Whore," said one of Dylan's minions. The kid snorted, cocked his head, and spat. His phlegm arced through the air, reflecting the light from the bar's neon signs, glittering and ugly. Everyone watched the loogie as it hung suspended for a moment at the top of its arc. Then it headed back down and splatted on her boot. The boy's laughter was loud and vicious. Anger pulsed through her gut, more acidic than any shot at Lucky's. "You're disgusting," she told Dylan, "and you can't even fight your own fights." Dylan frowned at his friends, and they stilled. Their silence was more ominous than their laughter. Emily was keenly aware that she could not control this situation. "Head in," Dylan told the other guys. "I'll be right there." "You sure, dude?" "Yeah." The boys did what they were told. Music pulsed, then quieted as the bar's door swung open and shut. Emily tried to move away too, but Dylan's hand clamped onto her arm. They faced each other, a boy and a girl alone on an empty stretch of sidewalk, breathing fog into the night. "Have you thought about what you're doing?" he said. "Like, really thought about it? Because it's kind of crazy that this is how you want to play it." "I'm not playing." His fingers squeezed her arm through the puffy coat. "You know what this means for you. You are done." "Oh, Dylan," she smiled. "I'm just beginning. I'm writing an editorial, too. It'll be in next week's Tower Times." He said slowly, "My family will end you. I know who your family is, and pretty soon they'll know who you are, too."
I'm speaking with Allison Leota, reading from her latest crime novel, The Last Good Girl, that deals with the issue of sex crimes on college campuses. The story is set at a fictional university in Michigan, and Allison draws her inspiration from cases that she handled as a federal prosecutor. Title IX and the Clery Act, how valuable are those laws for prosecutors? We hear about them. Are they worthwhile tools?
Oh, absolutely. They're worthwhile tools. They need to be enforced. And I think the problem is they haven't been that strongly enforced in the past decades.
Why?
In the past, when we think of Title IX, that's right, sports.
Athletics.
We think girls need a volleyball team. We think let's make sure there's a lacrosse team for the girls as well as the boys. And it has been used for that. But it's kind of sat idly to the side. Well, it's supposed to also prevent gender discrimination on campus. And gender discrimination, one of the strongest forms of gender discrimination, is sexual harassment. And I mean, if there's a systemic culture where girls are being sexually assaulted, what could be more harassing than that? Given the statistics that we're hearing, that even President Obama at the White House is telling us 1 in 5 girls are sexually assaulted while on campus. That is gender discrimination, and that's where Title IX comes into play.
What do you hope that your book will do if parents and students are reading it and deciding what college to go to? What kind of questions and research should they be asking and doing?
There's two kind of resources I see. One, are there just a ton of online resources. Just if you're thinking, maybe I want to go to U of M, Google U of M sexual assault, see what comes up. That's just very easy. There's the White House Task Force, the American Association of University Women. All of these have amazing tools for finding out what is going on at different college campuses. But in addition to that, it's just your basic kind of gumshoe detective work. And the best detectives have a notebook and some people skills. Go and talk to people in your community. If you're thinking of going to a college, ask that tour guide, you know, the woman who's showing you around. Does she know anyone who's been sexually assaulted? Does she know what to do if she's sexually assaulted? Is this talked about on campus? And I think insisting on having this conversation is one of the best things that you can do when you're looking into what is the culture at that particular campus.
The book is really, it's a cracking good read. And at the same time, as you've gathered, you're going to pick up a lot of insights into what it is like, especially for parents that it's been decades since we've been on campuses, of what the culture can be like on the college campus today. Allison Liotta's crime novel, The Last Good Girl, being released today. And she's holding book signings around Michigan, beginning tonight at Books a Million at 13 Mile and Southfield Road in Beverly Hills, and then on to Ann Arbor, Gaylord, and Novi through the week. And you can find details on her website. Allison, it was great talking with you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. This is wonderful to be here.
You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio.